vein seems to be. All right, good morning. Hello. It is Tuesday, October 15th, 2024. I've just returned from a week away on the East Coast at the Buddhist Recovery Network conference, which I'll talk about some more later. Also got to I've now developed like a network of nieces, and I just stay with nieces. So I stayed with one niece, and then I went and stayed with the other niece, and which was awesome. And my niece Alex had her 45th birthday on Sunday, so we had a birthday party. Just all in all, great trip. Anyway, nieces are really one of my favorite things to have. I don't know if anybody here has them, but they're like, it's like a daughter without all the problems. Not that there's any problems with my daughter. I mean, but if one had problems with one's daughter. Okay, before I dig myself in too deep, I think we should meditate. I'm just like getting, I just got home last night, so I'm like, okay, where's my bell? Where am I sitting? Okay, well, make sure my phone is off. Oh no, it's not off. God, we could have gotten interrupted. Okay, silence. Ah, breathing deep. Here comes Tanya from Decatur, Georgia. There we go. All right, so maybe there's one or two people who haven't been with us before. So what we do here is we do about a 20-minute meditation, and I guide that for about the first half of it, and then I let it be quiet for the second half. I'm realizing I may need a cough drop during this whole event. It's been an ongoing problem. And then after this sit, I'll talk for a while, and I will have to leave pretty quickly at 11 today, so I won't be able to run over like I often do. All right, so settling into a comfortable, stable, upright meditation posture, unless being upright is problematic for you, and then just settling into a prone meditation posture. Then you can close your eyes or just lower your gaze so that the attention turns inward. And feeling how you're holding your body. Maybe just feeling what's going on right now. Depending on your time zone, you may be further or less far into your day. Things happen, feelings arise, energetic states of uplift or fatigue. So just starting your sit with a kind of check-in on yourself. That may also include your mood. And then bringing in awareness of the breath. This tends to bring us back to the present if the check-in has us going off to thoughts. So just feeling the body breathing. You can feel the breath at a particular point, the nostrils or the belly, Or just more generally, have awareness of the movement, flow of breath. And having a sense of relaxing the body even as you remain upright. There's a kind of draining of any tension. And enjoying the moments of quiet, stillness, of release. Noticing when the mind, when thoughts capture your attention, and gently coming back to the breath and to the body. But this is quite natural. We're not striving to shut out thoughts or lock in the a tight focus on the breath, but just more sense of openness, the flow of experience. And we use the breath and the body as a way of grounding us in the present moment. There's nothing forced about that. We're really looking to something natural. Just awareness, open awareness. Seeing that the mind contains all experience. Contains breath and body, it contains thoughts, feelings. We have a kind of wide lens view of that. With an attitude of just calm, of relaxing, observing with interest. Without judgment, with acceptance. Could even call this kindness. My ease or difficulty we have in maintaining a stable mindfulness can just be feedback for us of what's happening internally, what our mind state is. We're not here to judge that. We understand that moods and states of mind rise and fall. They are pleasant, they are unpleasant, they are neither pleasant nor unpleasant. Here in this process, we aren't striving to control those mind states, but rather to observe, to see them, their nature as impermanent, as unsatisfactory, as not being self. All right. So I was yesterday morning I was meditating and sort of got had a moment of kind of getting swamped in the emotions of the crisis that the country seems to be in at this moment. And started to do some reflection on that, on how to hold that. And so I want to talk a little bit about that this morning. And some of this you'll be familiar with, but maybe hopefully put some things together that will be helpful. First of all, I was just thinking, I just thought, well, we're not the only ones. And I started to think about the places in the world that are having even worse crises than ours in the Middle East, Ukraine, Sudan, and more, the Rohingya in Myanmar and the Uyghurs in China, Sikhs in India. And just remembering that it's, as I talked about in like in Living Kindness, greed, hatred, and delusion are these qualities that are persistent historically, and nations are very much driven by these qualities. And so, what we've lived, this country has had this kind of privileged place in history, despite all the, obviously our own horrors, that self-created horrors, between the genocide of indigenous people and the slavery, the chattel slavery. But in terms of, our internal experience, like the broader picture is that we've been protected partly geographically because nobody's been able to invade us. But in any case, I look at this time, and I try to put it in the context of the Dharma, because I have to, because otherwise I go mad. To have a madman on the verge of taking control of the country is horrifying to me. And I was looking at the newspaper this morning, and it's like, I thought, well, the headline should just every headline should just be "Madman Runs for President." To me, that's all that's happening. If anybody doesn't agree with me, I'm sorry, but this to me, this is not a non-spiritual qu point or question. This is a spiritual, to separate the worldly from the spiritual is a kind of spiritual bypass, because this is affecting all of us on a spiritual level. We're all being terribly assaulted. And to maintain some balance, to maintain the qualities that we cultivate in our practice is so difficult under the circumstances. To maintain them as well as being a responsible, engaged citizen, which I think is also our duty. I consider it a duty. And many of you probably know that my daughter works, on Capitol Hill, so I'm kind of particularly attuned to this. And just FYI, she just got asked to come to Pennsylvania to work on the campaign this week. So it's good to know that there's a young person out there. But you may recall that, I talked about the last, on the night of the last election, and realizing, in the midst of my own kind of fear and despair, that my only refuge is the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. And that, I can't take refuge in my nation, I can't take refuge in my family, right? We can't take refuge in our job. None of these things are stable or reliable, and they aren't guides. And And one of my sort of a side point is that what really lasts is spiritual ideas, spirit, the great spiritual ideas and teachers are the ones who are remembered and who are not just remembered in, history books, but remembered in people's daily lives. Every day, people all over the world think of the Buddha, think of Christ, think of Muhammad, think of their great teachers. People don't every day go, "Oh, may I be like Napoleon today? May I be like Julius Caesar today?" No, the people who have been driven by greed, hatred, and delusion, are lost. No, nobody wants to follow them. And those things, those qualities cause suffering. Another really interesting story. I don't know if you've read about the latest Nobel Prize in economics was given to three people who did research into the how different political systems men. Well, they were asking the question, why are certain countries economically successful and why are some of them failures? And one of their conclusions is that the countries that were more inclined to democracy are more economically successful, and that the ones that led by autocrats are not, that have historically been led by autocrats. And this was a whole thing with the colonization and the way countries were colonized, and there's obviously more to it than that. But again, it's just interesting that the more wholesome and egalitarian political systems are more economically successful. I mean, that's just again an aside. But so let me come back to my own way of working with these challenges. The challenge to me of this moment and how to move through it with the spiritual, in an engaged way, but with the spiritual heart. And so, as I said, the big picture of that is that I take refuge in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha, and I want to talk about what that means in real terms, because it's just, something you can say and you can chant, I take refuge, but what does it mean to be guided by these things, to take refuge in them? So when we're taking refuge in the Buddha, it's kind of like, what would the Buddha do, or how would the Buddha engage this? And what are the and so as I thought about it, I thought, well, one way to think about taking refuge in the Buddha is taking refuge in the qualities of the Buddha. And so there's actually some suttas and chanting that that's done in Theravada Buddhism of the qualities of the Buddha. And I don't know that. But what I am aware of is what's called the 10 paramitas, which are the 10 qualities that the Buddha cultivated to perfection. And I think they're an excellent set of guidelines and goals for us, and ways to orient our mind and our behavior when we're trying to carry a spiritual practice forward. So I often when I think about the paramitas, I usually go to Sylvia Boorstein's book, which is called Pay Attention for Goodness Sake. And Sylvia's quite a wonderful teacher whose teaching tends to be very pithy and charming, and contains humor, as the title suggests, Pay Attention for Goodness Sake. But the goodness is the 10 perfections. And so I'm just going to first just really list these and talk briefly about them. Generosity, first of the 10 perfections. Just a great, Attitude, energy, the idea of, oh, what can I give? What can I give in this situation? And if it's, a situation where there's worldly situation, there's worldly things I can give, but there's also spiritual things I can give. So generosity, morality, sila, this is the foundation of recovery. It's the sp foundation of all Buddhist practice, and right away it aligns us with a wholesome kind of lifestyle and a wholesome way of being in the world that's not oriented towards greed, hatred, and delusion, because the first precept is to not kill, so it's not about hatred. The second precept is to not steal, so it's not about greed, and on and on. The third paramita is renunciation, letting go. So where are you attached? Where are you clinging? Where are you creating suffering for yourself or others through your clinging? And of course, we know that this is, the foundation of recovery as well, because recovery starts with renouncing certain behaviors. But this is the constant challenge for a Buddhist or someone striving to, cultivate Buddhist qualities, which is, where am I clinging? How am I creating suffering through clinging? And one of the ways that I create suffering is that I cling to a view of the way things should be and the way this country should be, and the way politics should be, right? So, which doesn't mean I shouldn't be engaged and doing everything I can that I believe is wholesome and aligned with these principles, that's moral. And but it's also at the end of the day, my experience and my suffering is directly related to my clinging. So one of the great challenges of spiritual practice is to be fully engaged without clinging. And that to me is one of the, paradoxes and one of the koans, as kind of this practice. The next paramita is wisdom. So this generally refers to, especially, seeing impermanence, seeing unsatisfactoriness, seeing not self, seeing the corelessness of it. So in this political realm, well, everything is impermanent. This although we have this thing called the United States of America, that's just some words. And the United States of America, there were only 13 states in the beginning. It's constantly changing, and what goes on in this country is constantly changing. And we can look back, we don't have to look back far to see, like, rising and falling and changing. Okay, everything is changing. So, which means I can't hold on to it. So, which means I need to let go. It's unsatisfactory. It's never going to be just the way we want it to be. And this is one of the motivations behind autocrats and why people are drawn to autocrats, because they promise that they're going to give them a thing that's going to be stable and it's going to take care of all the things that they're bothered by. And that is a lie, because you can't, there is no way to do that. And there is no self. There, America is just an idea, right? There, what is America? Is it the land? Is it the Constitution? Is it the states? Is it the people? It's all these things, right? There is no self to this country any more than there's a self in any of us. So, anicca, dukkha, anatta, impermanence, unsatisfactoriness or suffering, and not self. The fifth paramita is energy. If we want anything to happen, we have to be engaged, we have to show up, we have to motivate ourselves. So within energy, there's kind of sort of implied intention and engagement. The sixth paramita, patience. This is tough, right? I don't know if people, this is the greatest example, but it's just one that really comes to mind. It's a negative one for me, is that when Roe v. Wade was That Supreme Court decision was made in 72 or 73 that certain people were determined to change it. Many of those people who were determined to change it are dead now, but they set their mind on it and they did not give up, and they kept working at it because they believed in it. And I think the same thing, we need the same thing from, depending on whatever your views are, you need to st stick with it. And yeah, and change is possible. I mean, look at the civil rights movement, I mean, the what it took for that to happen. I mean, I was watching a really funny documentary on not fun, not well, it was funny in a way, but interesting anyway, documentary on my flight yesterday. It was called COPA 71, and it turned out that in 1971 there was a Women's World Cup soccer tournament in Mexico City, and FIFA was completely opposed to it. It was like some businessmen pulled it together, and there were about eight teams, maybe Italy, France, England, Argentina, Mexico, not the United States. And it happened once, and then it was over. And that because like FIFA was like anybody who puts on a women's soccer tournament you'll be disqualified and you'll be fined, and I mean it's horrifying, right? But it took like another 20 years for women's soccer to come back and to have a World Cup and to get into the Olympics, and now of course women's soccer is a huge international thing that people but 50 years ago people were like, oh, we'll do this thing. And they were like, no, you won't. And people tried to stop it, right? And, but eventually these, if we stay with these things, if we have patience, we can bring about change. The seventh paramita is truthfulness. I mean, what, we just had this one, right? We just had this one, truthfulness, I mean, it's a, on a deep level, it's a huge challenge to what is true, what is real. And that's really what Dharma practice is trying to discover, because the essence of Dharma practice is that the deepest truth is nibbana, is the unconditioned. But at every stage of our meditation practice, there's the exploration of truthfulness. The question we're always asking ourselves with mindfulness is, what is happening right now? So that's a question about truth. What is real? What is not real? And when we watch our minds, this is where we see delusion, right? We see what our minds do. And we're asking ourselves, is this really true? Wow, look at how my mind tells me these, distorts reality, distorts my experience. And anybody, in a relationship, we run into this question all the time. What did you mean? What did I mean? What was I trying to say? Oh, you're attacking me. No, I was just trying to, ask you for this to take the garbage out, and what's true? Always a question. And of course, on the political level, of course, it's critical. And the term that I kind of come to nowadays is good faith. Are you arguing in good faith? And that once you have the answer to that, you pretty much know who to trust. So the eighth paramita is determination. So determination goes with patience, right? And goes with energy, and we can see that there's connections here, right? Determination, so interesting, right? When I was smoking dope every day, I would like try to do something, and if it didn't happen right away, I would just give up. I was lacking in the paramita of determination, and that was one of the main things that I learned in recovery. I think of determination and patience as being showing up. That's the thing that we learn in recovery is just showing, just to keep one day at a time, you know, and how you write. And when people ask me, how do you write a book? I'm like, you know, one page at a time, one word at a time. You sit down. You don't like think, oh, well, this will take too long. Or, you know, people look at a novel and they go, oh, how could you write all that? As if you wrote it all in one day, or as if it was all in your head and you had to. No, you just, it's determination that, like, this is important. I'm committed to this. I'm just going to keep doing the next thing that I can do. The ninth paramita is loving kindness. Because if all of this is happening, and again, go back into the political sphere, if this is all happening and it isn't informed by love, then where's it going? Where's it really going? And it's just going about, it's just about, you know, economics, or it's just about business, or it's about health care, or it's about, you know, these impersonal things. And we see it. I mean, you know, not to be too, you know, partisan here, but you can see that Kamala Harris has a heart, you know. She speaks with loving kindness. Now, I don't know who she is, what she's like behind stage, you know, and I'm sure she can be mean and nasty and like we all can. And, you know, she's a boss of people and probably gets angry with them and great. But what she is trying to carry, what she's trying to reveal to the world is we have to love each other. We have to be connected. I mean, it's a cliche, but it's so true because look at this guy. He's all he's peddling is hatred. I'm sorry. Like, no, that's not what the world needs, you know, to quote the song, what the world needs now is love, sweet love. That's the only thing that there's just too little of. I mean, cheesy, but beautiful and true, you know. So, and it's for each of us, right? How do we practice loving kindness in this time of fear and despair and conflict? How do we maintain a heart of loving kindness? Doesn't mean that we, you know, look at these opposition people and go, oh, I really love them. You know, I mean, I think forgive them. They know not what they do. You know, I think see that they're caught in greed, hatred, and delusion. Have compassion for the fact that they're creating suffering for themselves and for others. These are not happy people. You know, these are not happy people. And the 10th paramita is equanimity, the balanced mind, the mind that is not caught in greed, hatred, and delusion, the mind that is able to face the anger, face the fear, and hold it with love, with whole, without losing our balance, without losing our commitment to a path, without becoming destabilized. You know, equanimity, the 10th paramita, you know, the ultimate perfection of mind. And it really points to going back to how I started talking about the recognition that the way things are is because of causes and conditions. Those causes are greed, hatred, and delusion. To be reactive to that, to be angry with that, to be fighting with that, is to just to feed those qualities. The challenge, the great challenge, is to be able to see that, engage it with love, but also engage it with a certain dispassion, you know. To be present and allowing, letting it come and letting it go. And this is again why we need wisdom. We need to see this is impermanent. You know, the United States of America is impermanent. Everything rises and falls. And that's not to get into some like, oh, it's the end of the empire thing, you know, who knows? I don't know what that, it's impermanent in every moment. It's not just impermanent over the long span, like eventually it's going to end, yes, but it's also, it's constantly changing. So how to be with that, how to be okay with that. This is the challenge of equanimity. And it's comes back again to our meditation practice each day. Why we need so much. I mean, I need to start my day with some level setting of internal balance. And then as the day goes on, there may be, you know, there will be lots of rising and falling and energies changing, but I have that level set to start the day, and that I can resort to, and that I can return to, and to reflect on the Dharma and to study the Dharma, and to be with the Sangha, you know. This is the great challenge of our time. So thank you for your attention, and we have a few minutes for people who would like to speak. Go ahead, Steve.
Well, I've been going back and forth this morning listening to your talk, from shedding tears to experiencing the clinging that I have to my anger, which is causing my own personal suffering. But I can tell you that every single thing that you spoke to today is exactly what I've been experiencing. And I've been struggling to figure out how I'm going to work my way through this. The clinging to my anger is so profound that I have experienced hate and anger to the extent to the people that I don't want to listen to or say, just like you. So I'm trying to find that equanimity. And I think you've given me a blueprint to how I can get through the next 25 or 30 days, and whatever happens is going to happen. But I mean, I've been finding myself just sitting in meditation and just breaking out into absolute emotional tears and crying, not just for what's going on in our political system in America, what's going on to our planet, to Mother Earth, and how we're destroying it because of greed, hatred, and delusion. So I want to thank you for your talk. I want to thank you for addressing the elephant in the room in a lot of situations where you don't know if there are people that think differently than us, which is their right to do so. But at the same time, I don't understand the insanity that's going on. I get really confused by it. So I'm going to let go of my anger and stay engaged, continue to donate as much money as I can to the cause, to try to talk to people. I've even engaged with supporters and tried to get them to understand why are you doing this? Do you understand what's really going on? And the complexities are so deep and so profound. People are just ignorant. And I don't mean that in a mean way, that ignorance is just like the Buddha says. So anyway, thank you. And that's all I wanted to say. I don't have any questions right now because you've answered what I've been looking for.
Yeah.
That's a good blueprint for me. Thank you.
Thanks,
I love you.
Steve. Yeah. I mean, I call the circumstances mass psychosis, because believing in things that are demonstrably untrue is clearly insane. It's like a schizophrenic who thinks that they're being, you know, the CIA is controlling their thoughts or something. We're in this situation where one person is feeding delusional ideas to people, and they've fallen under that spell, and it's a mass psychosis. And there's no way, you know, there's no treatment for that, right? There's no treatment for that. You just have to, you know, I mean, you can give them, you know, antipsychotic medication, but we don't have enough pills for the 80 million people who are caught in that delusion. So, and you know, anybody who feels like they didn't come here to hear about politics, I'm sorry if this is like not what you wanted to hear today.
Well, it's part of the Dharma, my friend. That's what you said. It's just, we need the Dharma right now. We need it.
Yeah. Right. Thanks, Steve. I mean, I'm not really trying. I'm not really talking about politics, actually. Politics is just, as you're saying, it's an expression of the Dharma. The Dharma is just the truth of the way things are, and that's one element of it is that there are political systems. Other people have any comments or questions?
Thank you.
Thanks, Deborah. Yeah, I mean, many, if not most of you have been with me for here for a long time, and it's one of the reasons I feel safe in talking this way in a way that I probably wouldn't, I would not with a group that I didn't know and sort of trust that you wouldn't be like, okay, exit. Johnny, you seem to have moved into a, oh yeah, your hand is so bare that it's blending into your wall.
I hadn't thought about that. That's too funny. I just realized that. Well, rather than the yellow hand, I thought I might switch over to that particular brand of hand. So, but I too appreciated your subject this morning because, like you, I struggle with what's going on currently, and it's tough, very tough. What I feel like I've done, and maybe this is the wisdom aspect of the paramitas that you were talking about, which is that, I reflect back on what, the United States of America has gone through in its past, and the whole era of Vietnam was 30 times more insane from my perspective, just my perspective, than what
For
we're
our
going through now. Oh,
generation, it was horrifying.
exactly. And the same, and that lasted 10 years. Well, it was longer technically, 10 years, but and so and when I get into conversations with friends and they talk about how terrible things are, I go, look, this country has been in, and not to say that we're going to survive any of it, doesn't, like you say, it's all impermanent, but there have been worse times in this country, and I have to use that as a way to try and salve my own, torment over this situation. Who knows? Who knows what'll happen, frankly? I don't. I certainly don't. But thank you for the reminder on how to look at this from a Buddhist standpoint.
Yeah, great. Thanks, John. I know I often have that reflection as well, and there were just like hundreds of thousands of people who were enslaved living in this country. That was fine. Oh yeah, great. There have been some bad things. So that Civil War thing was pretty bad. And, yeah. Anyway, let's not review. The 1619 Project covers a lot of the horrors.
Kevin, I need
Yes.
to go to another thing at in a minute or two, so I'm going to keep
Yeah,
recording if that's okay.
I need to go as well because as I said, I have to get to the studio and I'm really happy to be back. I really don't like missing Tuesdays. I usually if when I'm on the road, I usually manage it so I can actually be there, but last week was not practical. So I'm really glad to be back. I'll be here next Tuesday and I'll have surgery on Thursday. And hopefully I'll be able to talk the
Well,
Tuesday
you'll
after
be
that.
fine. Don't worry so much. Just
No,
stop worrying.
it's going to be a disaster, Steve. Are
No,
you
it's
kidding
not.
me? My life is over. It's terrible. I'm going to be in agony for months.
Well, just take your opioids for a day or two and get whacked out, and you'll be goofy and you'll be fine.
Oh, I don't like those things, man.
No, you don't.
Could they just give me some, beer and marijuana? That would be fine.
Well, just know you're loved and you better go record your book so we can listen to it. Thank you, Kevin.
Good. Thanks, Steve.
Absolutely. Thank